Continuing with our study of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 8, The Lord Slays the King of the Demons. So we left off at verse 43. So we're hearing how the various demigods, etc., are offering prayers. So Lord Brahma offered his prayer, and Rudra offered his prayer, Indra's offering a prayer, and now we're going to hear from the various rishis who will also offer their prayer to Lord Narasimha. So we heard with Lord Brahma's prayer that he described the Lord as unlimited, possessing unending potencies. No one can estimate or calculate your prowess and wonderful influence, for your actions are never polluted by the material energy. Through the material qualities, you very easily create the universe, maintain it, and again annihilate it, yet you remain the same without deterioration. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you. And so we heard there how the Lord's pastimes are very difficult to understand, astonishing. Vishwanath Chakravarti, the course commentary on that verse, he says that you made the Kumaras get angry and made your two gatekeepers fall. You made me, Brahma, give blessings to the demon, and you made your devotee appear in the family of demons. Inspiring the demon, you cause harm to the devotee. Then you personally manifest yourself to protect your devotee. No one can understand your plan. The Lord's doing all these what appears to be contradictory activities. Brahma's also offering respect to the Lord's energies, which are unlimited. He describes that although he killed this unconquerable demon in a moment, because his suitor Sattva, he says, even if you are angry, your actions are pure. I offer respects to you who perform creation, maintenance, and destruction. So he's, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has also analyzed Lord Brahma's prayers, especially in relationship to this pastime, naturally. That's one of the, you know, people say God is unlimited and he's inconceivable and he does these wonderful things, he's always pure, but they can't understand how he performs these activities in these forms. So these acharyas are pointing that out. Generally, one thinks if you perform activities, then how can you be unlimited and pure? Because why would someone who's full of unlimited potencies and opulences, and why would they need to do anything? If he's God, what does he need to do? He doesn't need to do anything. Everything is already there. It's eternally there. It's a common thing amongst karmis, especially in the West, where even if there was a heaven, they wouldn't want to go there because everything is so pure and perfect. Because it's perfect, they wouldn't want to go there. They would prefer to be here where there's a little bit more interesting things going on. Even though they're bad things, they consider that when you think of heaven, oh, everything's just wonderful, everything's just always nice. Nothing ever happens there because it's all perfect and wonderful. See? So that actually turns them off. They would rather stay here where at least it's interesting. So people have a concept of God that because he's pure, because he's unlimited, because everything is perfect, so it's almost, so why is he doing anything? But actually, so the Acharyas, you know, Lord Brahma is pointing out, and the Acharyas are pointing out that, yes, he's doing something, but what he does is his actions are unlimited, that so much unlimited power that an unconquerable demon, within a second, he kills him. That's his action. And so many benedictions given by Lord Brahma, without touching those benedictions, he has still killed him. He is sending this demon to harass his own devotee, and yet the devotee is not touched. So he's doing both at once. Who can do two things at once like that? Two things which are mutually contradictory, and yet everything is perfectly done. So his actions are unlimited. They're without material limitations. So they're the prayers of Lord Brahma. And at the same time, therefore, is he the creator of the material universe? Yes, but he also destroys it. But it's also unlimitedly wonderful. How can someone create the universe and at the same time be the destroyer of it and the maintainer? So, in all respects, yes, he performs actions, but they're not like the ordinary actions, and they're not, and they're so unlimited and inconceivably wonderful that, you know, don't have this concept that any, because we perform activities, that they're anything like ours. So they're the prayers of Lord Brahma. And we heard Lord Shiva, give some prayers that at the end of the millennium is the time for his anger. And of course, you know, that's Lord Brahma is saying, you get angry, but you remain pure. How is that possible? Anger is considered one, you know, for those in illusions, those who have lost control of the mind and senses. Like that. So the tamagun, but he gets angry and he's suddhisattva. There's no tamagun. So that is it. So that is a very unusual action. So there's actions with his form and then actions with his, you know, the emotions within. All very unusual. Lord Shiva in the next prayer saying that the end of the millennium is the time for your anger. Now that this insignificant demon, Hiranyakashipu, has been killed, my Lord, who is naturally affectionate to devotee, kindly protect his son Prahlad Maharaj, who is standing nearby as your fully surrendered devotee. So now Rudra, he's also appreciating the anger of the Lord because he represented the anger of the Lord in his role as destroyer of the worlds at the end of the millennium. So Lord Shiva, he knows that the Lord's anger is part of his lila, part of his pure transcendental pastimes. You know, the devotees are not afraid of that anger of the Lord. And in the commentary to that verse, Vishwanath Chakrabartikakor is saying that he's saying, because he's avyayatma, he never falls down. Even when angry, the Lord is affectionate toward his devotees. Therefore, Lord Shiva reminded the Lord to act like an affectionate father toward Prahlad Maharaj, who is standing by the Lord's side as an exalted, fully surrendered devotee. And we heard from Indra, and of course, Indra's prayers, he was describing, so we discussed these ones previously, but we're just refreshing. Indra is describing that, O Supreme Lord, you are our deliverer, protector, our share of sacrifices, which are actually yours, have been recovered from the demon by you, because the demoniac king, Hiranyakasipu, was most fearsome. Our hearts, which are your permanent abode, were all overtaken by him. Now by your presence, the gloom and darkness in our hearts have been dissipated. O Lord, for those who are always engaged in your service, which is more exalted than liberation, all material opulence is insignificant. They do not even care for liberation, not to speak of the benefits of karma, artha, and dharma. So, here, Indra is pointing out, of course, that during the reign of Hiranyakasipu, many people were disturbed in their routine duties of the Vedic civilization. And when he was killed, they felt great relief. The demigods, because they were, even the demigods, they were full of fear of the demons, they found it difficult to think of the Lord. But the pure devotees, no matter what happens, they never stop thinking of the presence of the Lord. So he was offering his prayers, representing those devotees who are not on the pure devotional platform, and expressing that they have been restored to their inability to think of the Lord due to their hearts being filled with the problems that Hiranyakasipu had presented, that had passed. So he is glorifying those devotees who, they're not interested in dharma, artha, karma, and moksha. So he's expressing how the things that were dear to the demigods were taken away, disrupted by Hiranyakasipu. And now that's been restored. But this prayer is also glorifying those devotees, such as Prahlad Maharaj, who are not so much interested in dharma, artha, karma, moksha, and therefore they're never disturbed by anything, and they never stop thinking of the Lord. So that's a very pleasing prayer. So then we hear today about the rishis. So that was just a recap. Today, text number 43. All the saintly persons present offered their prayers in this way. O Lord, O supreme maintainer of those sheltered at your lotus feet, O original personality of Godhead, the process of austerity and penance in which you instructed us before is the spiritual power of your very self. It is by austerity that you create the material world which lies dormant within you. This austerity was almost stopped by the activities of this demon, but now, by yourself appearing in the form of Narasimhadev, which is meant just to give us protection, and by killing this demon, you have again approved the process of austerity. This is very interesting how, you know, they're offering prayers and they're all speaking in turn. They're speaking according to their realizations. So here the rishis, they're not trying to speak on behalf of Brahma or Rudra or Indra. They understand that they're on a higher platform and that they will speak, you know, they're speaking from their higher realizations, and so they're not trying to, they're not speaking out of place. It's interesting, isn't it? So, for instance, if there was a function, you know, we had a function where we're collecting for the Vedic Temple of Understanding, who went to that? And Ambarish was there, and you know, some of the local devotees. And of course, so, you know, some of them had turns of speaking. Some of them were involved in, you know, very good at collecting donations from sponsors. So they spoke about, you know, that. Ambarish was speaking in terms of, you know, his original instruction from Srila Prabhupada. And, you know, overseeing the project. You know, his wife was speaking in terms, she was also very intimately associated with the project. So each speaker, you know, spoke, but according to their role in that pastime of establishing that temple. So that's proper. And they're all getting a turn. So that's another interesting facet here. That, you know, devotees who, or personalities who are significant persons, they're all getting a proper turn as well. So to leave anyone out. So imagine if we left Indra out. So we went through these prayers and we thought, oh, we've left Lord Shiva out, we've left Indra out. Oh, it doesn't matter. Who are they? We don't care. You know? We wouldn't want to do that, would we? So, and they're all speaking in a turn, aren't they? They're all, you know, according to like a hierarchy. I can just see your eyes peering over the top there. You need a higher cushion. And so, it's like one, they look like one of the little children at the end of that, because I just... So there's etiquettes, you know, there's etiquettes that we pick up here. So, you know, when there are functions, actually, you know, every temple should operate like this. Every temple, every department, every, you know, all the, you know, major events in ISKCON, they're like that. You know, when you have a Vyasa Puja, you know, you know, we read, you know, the spiritual masters, Vyasa Puja to Srila Prabhupada, or, you know, or to his spiritual master, if he's a grand disciple of Prabhupada, there may be some special, you know, guest devotees, senior devotees who come. We hear from them. If they're Prabhupada disciples, we hear from them. We generally hear from some of the senior disciples like that. We don't have to be too pedantic, but, you know, generally, I mean, you know, someone got initiated the day before someone else, you know, in another country. You know, we don't be too pedantic, but, you know, roughly. And, of course, if certain devotees have, you know, just been astonishing in their, you know, transcendental advancement, even if they're initiated a little later, sometimes they may jump up a rung. But, so there's an etiquette there. I know last year we went to Vyasa Puja, and we did that up north. So Japataka's daughter, Raja Kumari, my spiritual master said, you know, just, you know, didn't have time to hear everyone, but he wanted he would hear later, you know, or read them later. But he wanted just a selection, therefore, during the ceremony. So what she did was taking that instruction, but perhaps in the wrong way, and just mixed everyone up. So there was no, you know, there was no, the etiquettes were almost abolished. So she took it the wrong way. Like, just have a selection, a variety, but he wasn't saying abolish the etiquette, but that's what she did. So very senior devotees were going last and know so many things like that. So, you know, even, but we should, you know, we learn all of these things, you know, we see there's a reason why we do it. And what happens here, of course, is that, you know, as we hear these prayers, then we see how, you know, we see things from different perspectives, but those different perspectives, everyone can have a different perspective, but it doesn't mean that someone of lesser realization, their perspective should overshadow someone of higher realization. And that's what sometimes happens with devotees. You know, I remember in the beginning of, you know, Bhakti Shastra coming back, and I'd ask a question, devotees, and I was waiting for someone to answer the question from the purport we were reading, you know. And no one was giving an answer from the purport. It was like they all had their realizations, and then I said, no one's really given the answer, and I'd say, here's the answer here. And they say, oh, yes, but every devotee has their realization. I think, what is this nonsense? Where does this come from? Every devotee has their realization. Does that mean that Prabhupada has a realization? I have a realization. I say mine first, so that's better. Or I speak loud. Or Prabhupada doesn't get a turn, but I do, so his realization is not even heard. What is that nonsense? You know? So, you know, yes, everyone has their realizations, but, you know, there is an etiquette that, you know, prominent realizations should, you know, literally form the mood and the background that other devotees are giving their realization within that. So, for instance, if Srila Prabhupada spoke and then he asked us to, you know, if we were present when Srila Prabhupada was here, and so you say something, our realization is given within the framework of what he has just said. We may say something different to what he said, give different analogies, but we're actually speaking in terms of the realizations that he has said, not overshadowing it and not ignoring it. See? So when we say, oh, every devotee has their realization, you know, there's a lot of nonsense in that, you know, it's just a free-for-all. It's all one Prabhu, you know. We're all Mayavadis here, aren't we? Yeah. I've had several dreams where, sometimes I'd go to a program with Srila Prabhupada, and I remember one time we went into this home program, and we walked in, and then I was with Srila Prabhupada, and someone said to Srila Prabhupada, "Oh, Mick Jagger from the Rolling Stones is out the back, and he'd be interested to hear some Krishna consciousness." So myself, Srila Prabhupada, went, and we sat on this sort of bench with our backs against the wall. Mick Jagger was on the other side of the room with some of his band members, and Prabhupada was speaking about, the Bhagavad Gita, reading verses from Bhagavad Gita. And then sometimes Prabhupada would quote a verse, and then he'd turn to me and he'd say, "What is the rest of that verse?" And I'd quote the rest of the verse. Anyway, at some stage he got up and he said, "So Ganga, just finish." And Prabhupada left. But I continued to speak, in the same line as what he was saying. I'm like, "Oh, okay, Prabhupada's fine, I'll say whatever I like." It was, it's like you're doing something on behalf of Prabhupada, like that. That's a devotee, you're doing something on behalf. So, different occasions like that, it's, there's a few occasions like that where he's just turned to me and just said, you just finish. But, these verses are like that. You'll find many times through the Bhagavatam where different personalities in the universe and the etiquettes are always followed like that. So these things, of course, are not necessarily these are the overviews that we get because we're studying the whole chapter and the whole section. So you may not necessarily get that when you go to Srimad Bhagavatam class, because each devotee is literally just speaking that verse. But these classes that we have, there's always, they're very special in that there's a lot more depth that we go into it that you're just not going to get even attending all the classes and what have you in the temple. Any comments or questions on that? So now, these rishis, and of course, rishis are famous for performing austerities and tapasya, and they're speaking in terms of that, and they're making that point that the process of austerity and penance, in which the Lord has instructed them before, is the Lord's own spiritual potency.
When talking about etiquette, I was thinking about the Vedic etiquette. Mm-hmm. Actually, even when I was growing up, generally the thing is that kids are not to be heard. Mm-hmm. Like, can be seen, are not to be heard. Mm-hmm. Kids are not to be spoken. Mm-hmm. But now we ourselves have turned, especially in big families,
I mentioned that in class one day. I thought I might have been a bit out of line,
It is so distinctly felt here that we are supposed to be giving Vedic knowledge to the kids, and we are supposed to have a higher knowledge. Mm. But then, when it comes to behavior, the kids are mostly behaved. So there is something really drastically going wrong in the Indian community.
Yeah.
If we have forgotten our roots, etiquette.
They're very important.
Etiquette that we have to enforce it on. Nowadays, I think in that aspect, Indians are following the Western culture without understanding the Western culture.
Yeah.
They're not understanding what the Western culture means. What is it to give freedom?
Mm.
Because, how is it to train the kids? they're young, they're allowed to play, they're allowed to make noise or they're whatever, and speak out anything they want.
The parents cater to what makes the child happy.
Yes.
Not that the child is fitting in with what the parent knows is beneficial.
Yeah. In fact, my niece, she tells her parents that I have to be heard. She demands to be heard. That's how it is. And they said, yes, you have to be heard. That's how it is. Yeah. Things have. Even in people who are Krishna devotees who are coming to the temple,
I notice it's there, of course, in both, you know, in both the Western children and the Indian children. You know, it's there definitely in both. But you know, I did notice that, you know, that there is a common trait, not as much as I see in the Western children, where the parents allow the child to do anything they want. So, you know, for instance, if the child comes into the temple room and starts, you know, if there's an arty tray there, the child will grab the bell and ring it and throw it on the floor and things like that. And the parents will just stand there and watch. And I'm, you know, really surprised how much they sometimes let them do. You know, it's just, you know, it's just a kid, you know, it's like it's a policy that it seems to be quite common, that and when I go to their homes and things like that, you see it. So it's, you know, both you know, the Western and the Indian children, they are not getting the proper training, but that seems to be a real prominent tendency, that they just allow them to just do anything they want. And they'll just stand there and watch as if it's a no-no to somehow correct them. You know, it's almost like this is the way you allow them to, I don't know, be the best they can or something, you know. So etiquette. And when I do a hair cutting, you know, what happens is, even today, you know, the parents start singing Humpty Dumpty and, you know, old MacDonald had a farm and, you know, things like that. Today was one of the first times when they started singing that, the father corrected. No. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But usually they're catering to the children, you know, and sometimes, you know, I used to say, oh, do you want to, you know, put on like one of the children's, you know, Krishna stories or something, you know, like that. And they'd put on a Bollywood show, you know, and I'd see actually in some cases, you know, it was just whatever the kid wanted to, you know, watch. In some cases I'm thinking, this is what, you know, mum and dad want to watch. But they are catering to the child's demands more so than what is beneficial to them. So if they show the child a Krishna DVD and they show the child a Bollywood and the child likes the Bollywood, that's the one they're going to watch all the time. They're not going to put the Krishna one there. That's it. Krishna's gone. So we're just having a discussion on the etiquettes that are being followed, how the realizations, you know, beginning from the most senior Brahma coming down, and that those realizations, according to their speaking, their realizations according to their position, and they're not trying to speak on behalf of someone above them or what have you, and they're following an etiquette like that, and that. This should be commonplace in all of our ISKCON functions, Vyasa Pujas, you know, Ishtagoshis, you know, we're talking about, they had the temple of Vedic Planetarium, so, you know, following different etiquettes of who speaks, what they speak on, so anything like that, it should be there. But it appears that, you know, there's a lot of things that we used to follow, which they just don't follow anymore, because, you know, the etiquettes are really so much better. And we, you know, which is really unusual, because, you know, I guess people look back. I know when they had the, was it the 50th anniversary? And there was a lot about current contributions. Was it Prabhupada? Yeah, and a lot of the Prabhupada disciples were there. There was a little bit about showing some of the Western devotees doing things, but not much, you know, in the, you know, Prabhupada's early disciples, you know, doing things for this Melbourne temple. There wasn't a lot. There was a whole thing about Moomba, you know, which was more current, and so many things. But there wasn't a lot. It was almost like there's a, you know, a bunch of, you know, say, you know, Aussies, you know, not quite dressed properly as devotees, doing a few things here and there. And, you know, their contribution was almost like, it was very disappointing, you know, from, I wouldn't have wanted to be, you know, one of those Prabhupada disciples from that era sitting in that room, because they hardly really got a mention. It was almost like, you know, looking at them as if, you know, they sort of did something, but, you know, you got to, you know, basically they were just Aussies doing what they can. But actually, you know, from that era, the etiquette was so much better. You know, it was so much better than all these etiquettes that were just followed. And now so many etiquettes you see, it's like, you know, it's like the Bhagavad Gita is there for decoration. They actually just don't care about them. It's more that if there is ability to organize money and communications and things like that, that that's more important than following all the etiquettes. That's the impression that you get now. That if someone has corporate abilities, then that is all that's required, and the actual you know, etiquettes of the Bhagavad Gita are sort of secondary. They're like just going to waste your time, you know. We're going to do things in our corporate way, and we're going to be very efficient. We've got our communication down, we've got our, you know, flow chart, we've got our, you know, business model, you know, we've got all the corporate things in structure. So, and then you're going to come in with this you know, Bhagavad Gita philosophy, you're just going to waste our time. We're, you know, come back when we're finished with that. You know, it's a little bit like that. I did see that slip in the late 80s. This is all the etiquette went out the door in the late 80s, when a lot of the, you know, GBCs, gurus and senior devotees sort of fell down. It's never quite, you know, it was almost like at that stage, many of the, where many devotees in the thousands lost faith in authorities in ISKCON, because of a lot of big fall downs, that the tendency to, you know, follow etiquette, which is a hierarchical thing from authorities, it almost sort of went out the door in ISKCON to some degree, and it never quite came back in. To some degree, but never quite been the same. That's what I saw. But before that period, following etiquette was very, very strong. Very strong. Much better than it is now. I hope we, you know, we do get back. But so, and of course, this is the beauty of the Bhagavad Gita. Now, this movement is going to last for 10,000 years. So you can only imagine in different parts of the world the different upheavals that will go on, you know, and sometimes not by the loss of senior devotees falling down, but sometimes they may all be killed, you know, in battles, you know, and whole zones, you know, whole countries may have to, you know, flee, devotees spreading to other countries that are not torn up by war, and then, you know, things can break up. But in the course of 10,000 years, what happens is we always have to, whatever happens, we have to get back to the Bhagavatam to restore everything. The Bhagavatam and the Prabhupada leaders. Chaitanya Charitamrita, to restore everything. It's all there. So, and therefore, you know, the acharyas, they're described as the protectors of the pure path of devotional service. If we look at Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, Jagannath Das Babaji, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, what did they do? They fought against everything that tried to, you know, everything that tried to, insert any impurities trying to infiltrate into the pure path. They fought to keep it out. That was their whole life. They fought to protect. No, this is pure devotional service. This is our philosophy. This is our culture. Nothing else is getting in, and nothing is being taken away. That's what the leading devotees are supposed to do, fight to protect this. So therefore, you know, when you all get your Bhaktivedanta, Bhaktivaibhava, etc., we're all going to give you swords, axes, guns. No, all you need is your slokas and your realization of the Bhagavatam. You'd be spiritual warriors. Yeah.
Can we transgress a bit?
Can we what?
Transgress a bit.
Transgress? Depends how far. Mm-hmm.
The same topic.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is interesting that this happens in people who are coming to the temple. Because they are supposed to be having a Vedic knowledge. And what I've seen is the people who are coming to the temple, they are having another struggle. They are having the struggle of kids going to Western schools and the kids being exposed to being having a lot of freedom to eat, see TV, and all those sort of stuff. So they are forced to restrict the kids on that aspect, and so they are trying to see how, if you want to make an interest in Krishna consciousness, how to do it. So that I see is a struggle there.
Yeah.
So, and so that if they are missing, okay, so long as they are following certain restrictions that they are given, okay, so let them make noise, let them make play, let them. They are giving them freedom there.
Well, I discussed that a little bit yesterday from the Srimad Bhagavatam verse in the temple room, that, you know, the temple itself is an educational, you know, it's a place where we can be educated in the process of pure devotional service, and then we elevate to the platform where we appreciate pure devotional service, and we implement that in our homes in a very natural way for the family, you know, in a way that's suitable to the family. So it's not a temple environment, but it's a home, and at the same time, it can be non-different from Vrindavan. When we have an emphasis that somehow we can only do devotional service at the temple, or we're only acknowledged for devotional service that we do at the temple, acknowledged, recognized, supported, then it's really undermining that, you know, the there needs to be more encouragement and support from the temple to that the devotees, the grihasthas, that in their homes they make it this nice Vrindavan atmosphere, and so much of their devotional service will be done in their home environment. A huge proportion. Now, over the course of many years, I have seen that when a devotee somehow has to reduce their service at the temple, or they can no longer do, they become very, very sad. And I'm thinking, why are you even thinking in those terms? As if somehow your devotional service has stopped or reduced. You know, why are you even thinking like that? Hasn't anyone taught you? What have they been teaching you here, that you can only the Krishna's only found at the temple? You know, the philosophy is Krishna's everywhere. And in the devotee's homes become like Vrindavan. So why are, so it's because we're not really, again, following what we're being taught in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, Nectar Devotion, that we're actually having this problem, you know, with the children. We'll have you know, if we expect that our children, you know, will only get Krishna consciousness if we keep dragging them to the temple where there's not really a lot for them to do, you know, and they sit around, hang around, waiting for the parents to finish their services and just kicking around in the courtyard, then we're going to have problems. You know, the temple is a place where we teach people, you become Krishna conscious, now you take that Krishna consciousness and you do everything in your own home environment, in your work environment, with your children. You don't have to come to the temple, you know, every day in order to see Krishna. Krishna's there in your home. Your home is like Vrindavan. But certainly, you know, Prabhupada wanted that all the people from their homes and the small centres and the farms and the restaurants, they all support a big temple. He wanted that. You know, that's there in the, you know, like the Namhata by, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Nityananda. You know, there are many satellite projects and there are many householders. They all support a big temple. It's good to have a big temple. It's like Mayapur. We have this huge big temple. All the temples in the world support Mayapur. See? So like in a place like Victoria, there may be many centres, many farms, many temples, many homes, many restaurants. And they all support like the major temple of Melbourne. This is a very special temple because Prabhupada established it. It will always be something very significant because it's you know, Prabhupada Tirtha. So many temples may go up in Victoria, but they will all support Melbourne to some degree as a central, you know, place. And then all the temples around the world are supporting the international headquarters, which is Mayapur, a big world scale. You need that because then, you know, if people see just Krishna consciousness in someone's home, they may not appreciate the extent of it. When they see the big Mayapur, all the people all over the world will stand up and say, oh, this is monumental. This is unlimited. This is, you know, bigger than anything in this world, like that. So that people need to see that. So, you know, the big centres are supported by the smaller ones. The international headquarters is supported. But if we have a situation, imagine if we could only do the devotional service when we go to Mayapur. Imagine we had the Mayapur, and everyone around the world, you know, you want to do some service, you have to go to Mayapur. You want to go to Vrindavan, that's where Krishna is. It doesn't make sense. So, but Prabhupada, what he wanted and what he actually said in his conversations, was that all the smaller centres like satellites support the big centre, and the big centre supports all those around it. And that's what we're not seeing. Because when I was on the farm, I tell you, I felt completely isolated, and I don't think I'm the only one that ever, you know, being on the farm who just felt like you're alone without support. I remember I waited 2 months, it might have been three, for one meeting. And when that such and such a person came down for that meeting, opened up his laptop, spent most of the time looking at that while I sat on the other side of it waiting for such and such a person to finish, and then put the thing down and said, oh, I've got to go. And I had a 2-minute meeting. And that was it. And I had prepared reports on everything that could be done, and so many plans and so many things, and I never even heard of that. So, and you know, I always said that basically there are so many devotees in Melbourne, the farm doesn't need them. You just send a few down for a weekend, they spend a weekend, and they go back to Melbourne. We're not going to try and keep them. They just come down and do a little bit of work. You know, you get so you've always got a dozen people. But when, you know, the problem is if people go to a small centre, like I was in Perth for many years, and one of our problems was we only had about four, five, six people. And so when people come there, they just couldn't relate to, I'm not joining this half a dozen people, because that's all they could see. You try and explain to them, I was always showing them pictures of Mayapur and Melbourne, but they could only see that. So it really hampered, and the same on the farm. So my suggestion was, you always have a dozen devotees at the farm. There's always prasadam. I used to cook for everyone, but you know, I don't think they do that now. So people go there and it's always flourishing. And then they think, oh, I'd like to join this. But those devotees don't have to stay there. They go there once a year. There's enough devotees in Melbourne that they just go there once a year, and you would have continually a dozen, two dozen devotees down there, and you would actually make devotees really quick. But I never got one devotee. And one devotee came down one time, and he was called by someone, I won't mention, what are you doing there? He said, I've arranged my service. I've got one service today. I was cutting out the 4 o'clock fruit. I've arranged with someone. Said, no, you come back here. And he was asked to come back. Anyway, I won't bore you. But the thing is that, you know, Prabhupada's, this is the answer to your question, Nirmala, that, you know, we're not following what Prabhupada wanted exactly, and he wanted that all the small centres, you know, support the big centres. And that's how you get a big centre. A big centre to maintain itself, very difficult. If all the small centres are all grouped together, it's going to flourish. No matter what, there'll never be a problem. But that big centre has facilities that support all the other smaller, you know. So it's a wonderful, you know, that's Prabhupada's vision. And where's he getting that? From Lord Nityananda. You know? In the same way, exactly the same, the Mayapur, Vrindavan is supported by everyone in the world. And look at how every temple in the world benefits from having the Mayapur Center. You know, when we show people that Mayapur Center, we benefit. We send people there. Oh, you go there, and they come back. You know, someone's, I'm not sure about Krishna consciousness. Oh, go to Mayapur. I go to Mayapur. Okay, give me a bead. I'm going to chant 16 rounds. I'm going to take, you know, fire it up. They see that temple, they come back in ecstasy. See? So that's the problem, Nirmala, that if we just try and, you know, if we're doing things half-hearted or halfway, our children, we will have problems with the children. And to solve that problem, we actually have to, you know, understand what Prabhupada gave us and implement it. Because there are no shortcomings in what Prabhupada gave us. There are shortcomings in what we have, we are doing without the proper vision of what Prabhupada wanted.
And suppose a parent has Krishna consciousness at home, and they were saying, okay, they have a program and said, if I go to the temple, I go to my classes and all the kids are getting distracted, and so I have to pay attention to them. Then they won't be able to have devotee association. Then they will not have devotee association. They will miss on the devotee association, and they will be, everybody will be there with their own kids. And what about the devotees? Then the mother feels that, I'm always with the kid. I'm not going to
the Krishna consciousness.
She feels
isolated. Yeah. There is, as we say, when we, there are definite problems, you know, and without doubt, we can almost lose this whole generation of children. That's what I see. Because we're not really, you know, there's some token gestures of doing things for them. But really, the, you know, if someone came to this temple and said, oh, I see that your main focus is on this generation of children, that would be wonderful. But I doubt anyone will come here and say that. And therefore, we may lose this generation of children. But actually, of all the projects we should be doing, top of our list should be that this temple, this zone, is our first priority, is the children of the devotees in this generation, because we have never in ISKCON had such an opportunity. You have never, you know, we used to have one child in the temple, child of a Grihastha. We didn't have many Grihasthas, and the Grihasthas mostly lived in the temple without kids. You know. Now we've got, you know, this is a unique period in, like in Melbourne, where we've got so many children, ranging from young. We've never had that before. And yet, the opportunity is literally, it's not a, there's no one in charge in that project. Okay, this, there's not even a department that deals with that. You know, there's complaints department if they're too noisy. If the children cause too much noise, then we'll have to chastise the parents. You know, you're letting your children run around causes so much noise. So, there is certainly, you know, a great danger. And I don't think Srila Prabhupada would be very happy about that loss of opportunity. You know, we're preaching. Who are we preaching to? Not the kids. So, you know, we're preaching, right? We're doing so much, spending so much money on preaching. Who's the first persons who are eligible for us to preach to? Our own children. They're the first persons who should be getting the maximum benefit from the finances and facility and the manpower of this temple. They should be the first on the list to get the maximum attention and benefit from all of that. But actually, in one sense, they're almost last. So that's not good. No, I don't think Prabhupada would be very happy about that. So then, you know, if we're preaching to someone and someone's asking so many questions about Krishna consciousness and we just ignore them, and, you know, talk to someone who's really not interested at all, that's not very good preaching. You know, the children are asking so many questions, and they're constantly asking so many questions. They're very intelligent children. And, so, you know, it's but all of this is in Prabhupada's books, and that's why we must study these books, because when we don't, if we just become bureaucratic and corporate-like, then it appears that everything is going on intelligently, but that's what we call over-intelligent. Yeah, that word that come up, over-intelligent means Prabhupada is saying do this, but we've got something new that's different, that's more than what Prabhupada is doing, that's over-intelligent. And that comes up in this, that was Harami Kassipu, over-intelligent. Prabhupada is saying this, and we're saying something more than Prabhupada. The previous... you know, Prabhupada's disciples followed certain etiquettes and had certain, you know, focus on preaching. And but we're doing more than that. That's over-intelligent.
So you're almost suggesting we should have a Gurukul in Melbourne.
Why not? How many children do you think that we have? What was, we could probably get 500 children tomorrow. Anyway. So some things are going on, but, you know, it could be a little bit of a token, but I have very serious concerns about losing a whole generation. So here, Lord Narasimha, is being praised because he killed Hiranyakasipu, and by doing that he is reaffirming what the Lord gave. The Lord gave the process of austerity, and with the appearance of Hiranyakasipu, that those instructions were overshadowed, that process was overshadowed, and when the Lord killed that person, the Lord affirmed, no, I want that. Yeah. So, sometimes we see in ISKCON that it is like that, that in many cases, you know, it's like we had the Zonal Acharya system and different things like that. And then, by Krishna's arrangement, the whole thing is not supported by the Lord. It crumbles. And then the Lord is affirming what should be there. You know, that this system is not supporting, but this system is supporting, like that. So, in a similar way, anything introduced into ISKCON, which is different to what the Lord's desires are, will affirm what he wants by only supporting what he wants. And other things he will not support, and therefore they crumble. And we've seen, you know, big things crumble in ISKCON. And even big personalities. So, but here, Prahlad Maharaj, this is interesting. Prahlad's just a humble devotee who's taken shelter of the Lord. But literally, Prahlad Maharaj has reintroduced order all throughout the universe. So here the rishis, they're praising Narasimha. Oh, you brought back this process of austerity. But who did that? Prahlad did. But Prahlad's, all he's doing is, as a humble devotee, he's always just trying to do his part. Now, his part was that I have the ability to preach to my classmates. He's not trying to become, you know, to remanage the universe, you know. He has the opportunity. I can preach to my classmates about Krishna consciousness as instructed by Narada Muni. I don't have facility to preach further than that. I'm sort of stuck in that environment. By that, he realigned everything in the entire universe back to its original proper situation by pure devotional service. So, you know, on this question, sometimes we see things in ISKCON that we think, oh, this should be here, that shouldn't be there. But we should always, you know, just remember that we're a humble devotee. The Lord gives us an ability to do a certain amount of service. You know, not that every time something is wrong in ISKCON, I'll be the person who will change the whole of ISKCON. I'm going to take on the whole GBC and this one and that one. You know, we don't have to do that. But still, just by doing our own service that the Lord authorizes us to do is very, very powerful. Just to be the humble, you know, like that. So, you know, we do see that sometimes big things need to be changed and what have you, but it doesn't necessarily mean we should charge into every office like a bulleted goat and try and, you know, take down, you know, the whole management of ISKCON or what have you in order to do it. You know, we still have to understand that the Lord allows me to do a particular service and not much more than that. But if I do that in pure devotional service, that's enough for the Lord to appreciate that and make wonderful changes that affect the whole movement. I remember one time I was on the farm, Gokul was there, and then there was other devotees, you know, members of his family, his wife's family, and they had this meeting. I didn't really go to many, but I went to this one. And at the end of it, they were really angry because they just weren't getting reciprocation with Melbourne. And so, do you remember Sean, the boy? Yeah, the scar, of course. So they decided what they were going to do was to come up to the office here in Melbourne and just literally, you know, shirt front, which you grab the managers here, throw them up against the wall and demand that we're not leaving this office until you actually fill out demands. That was the end minutes of that farm meeting. I said to them, you know, look, I said, I'm new to these meetings, but you can't do that. You know, you can't do that. But that was actually the conclusion of the meeting, and they were going to do it. They were so angry. I said, you can't do that. And they didn't. So, So we're learning from Prahlad Maharaj, and we're learning how, you know, one pure devotee in the universe, and look at what Prabhupada did. Prabhupada didn't try to change the Gaudiya Math in order to fix everything that was wrong there. You know, he just tried to do the service that his spiritual master asked him to do, and that was enough to change the whole world. And that's what we're learning here from Prahlad Maharaj. Now, Sri Pitara Uchu. So the inhabitants of Pitraloka prayed, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Narasimhadev, the maintainer of the religious principles of the universe. He has killed Hiranyakasipu, the demon who by force enjoyed all the offerings of the Shraddha ceremonies performed by our sons and grandsons on the anniversaries of our death, and who drank the water with sesame seeds offered in the holy places of pilgrimage. By killing this demon, O Lord, you have taken back all this stolen property from the abdomen by piercing it with your nails. We therefore wish to offer our respectful obeisances unto you. Purport. It is the duty of all householders to offer food grains to all their departed forefathers, but during the time of Hiranyakasipu, this process was stopped. No one would offer Shraddha oblations of food grains to the forefathers with great respect. Thus, when there was a demoniac rule, everything concerning the Vedic principles is turned upside down. All the religious ceremonies of Jagya are stopped. The resources meant to be spent for Jagya are taken away by the demoniac government. Everything becomes chaotic, and consequently the entire world becomes hell itself. When the demons are killed by the presence of the Srimadev, everyone feels comfortable, irrespective of the planet upon which he lives. And so this is another wonderful thing about these prayers, of course, is that, you know, we understand that, Hiranyakasipu was killed by Nrisimhadev because he was about to kill his son Prahlad. So many soldiers were killed, and Hiranyakasipu was a ruler, he did have a big position, so one may criticize Nrisimhadev. That maybe that's a bit too much. You kill the ruler of the whole universe. You know, he was managing things pretty well. I mean, that's, you know, people say that about Duryodhana. He was managing things pretty well. So when we see, you know, through all the different departments that, so much trouble here. Oh, we didn't realize you had this. So then you're seeing how every single planet was affected in a really adverse way. Then we understand, it was good that this person was removed. So the prayers are very important. They're saying what you did, Lord Narasimha, was correct. You know, and no one should ever criticize that he killed this demon, in such a ferocious, angry way. He is the Lord. What sort of God is that? You know, what sort of an angry God is that? You know, the little boy is the son of a demon anyway. Ripped open the Father, the ruler of the heavenly planets. So they're making sure that the Lord is glorified for this pastime by presenting a full understanding of the problems. Sri Sri Uchu, the inhabitants of Siddhaloka prayed, O Lord Narasimha, because we belong to Siddhaloka, we automatically achieve perfection in all eight kinds of mystic power. Yet, Hiranyakasipu was so dishonest that by the strength of his power and austerity, he took away our powers. Thus he became very proud of his mystic strength. Now because this rogue has been killed by your nails, we offer our respectful obeisances unto you. On earth there are many yogis who can exhibit some feeble mystic power by manufacturing pieces of gold like magic. But the inhabitants of the planet Siddhaloka are actually extremely powerful in mysticism. They can fly from one planet to another without airplanes. They can actually become very light and fly in the sky. By severe type of austerity, however, Hiranyakasipu excelled all the inhabitants of Siddhaloka and created disturbances for them. The residents of Siddhaloka were also beaten by the powers of Hiranyakasipu. Now that Hiranyakasipu had been killed by the Lord, the inhabitants of Siddhaloka also felt relieved. So that's quite interesting that in this world, no matter how powerful one is, you'll always find someone who's more powerful. So most people, who are like either, boxers, karate, martial arts, like that. They'll all quote that, if you say to them, you say even the world champions, no matter how powerful, or you're so powerful, but they'll always admit, you'll always find someone more powerful than that. That's a very common saying. And of course, when someone is renowned for being powerful, then that person who is more powerful will always want to challenge them and beat them up to show that I am more powerful. I remember when I was in school, I went to Broadmeadows High, a very rough school in my day. It's still rough. Even today, if I say, Broadmeadows, it doesn't matter anywhere in Australia, people say, well, Broadmeadows. But there was one boy, a new boy who came to the school. I still remember his name. Very big, tall fella. He'd come from a new school. He came to the school. So we're only quite young. And my friend, Chris, he was the best fighter in the school. He was a very angry person because he had a really mean dad. His father, one time knocked the packet of salt into their dinner and then made them eat it. They didn't eat, he's just a really mean man, really cruel, and if he didn't, he would beat them. So he was a very, very, so my friend was the best fighter. So then this other guy, he came, he was very tall. And when he came, he said, I'm the best fighter in the school. So for saying that, then it got back to my friend. My friend said, oh no, that's not going to happen. So that's just a natural thing because he's the best fighter. So he saw him, this boy walked into the toilets, and then my friend said, come with me, I want to show you something. And he went and he kicked the door down while he grabbed him and beat the living hell out of him. He says, I'm the best fighter in this school. And that was the last we ever heard of that. But that's the natural thing. Someone is the best fighter, they get a reputation, but there's always someone better. And that person, when they find out that they're saying they're good, they will come after them. That. So these Siddhalokas are like that. They're very powerful yogis. So Prabhupada uses this term. So we don't know exactly what Hiranyakasipu, but he says The residents of Siddhaloka are also beaten by the powers of Hiranyakashipu, beaten by the powers, you know, you can use that in two ways, can't you? It's like, you know, Hiranyakashipu had more powers, but he would have made them, you know, he would have made them feel some pain as well. Somehow or another. It was very interesting as it went, because I wasn't, although I did martial arts and things like that, but I wasn't really, I never really went looking for fights and things like that. But I think I was funny and people liked me. But usually the toughest persons always befriended me because everyone else was scared of them. So no one would go near them. But I didn't really have a fear of them for some reason or another. And so in primary school also, there was someone who stayed down about 3 or 4 years, who was almost an adult, huge person with, you know, one cross-eyed and, you know, he'd sort of look massive, and no one would even speak to him or go near him. But he befriended me because I had no fear of him like that. Only trouble is, you know, to play with him, he'd pick you up and throw you across the room and things like that. Christmas around, so no one would come near me generally, because usually my friend was there, you know. But that person, just to finish the story, the one who beat the one up the toilet, one time he had a fight with my brother. My brother was older than him, and I tried to stop him. So we were all friends, and he wouldn't stop, so I did beat him up. So that may be the best fighter in the school, but I didn't advertise it. Yeah. So, so the Vidyalokas pray. Our acquired power to appear and disappear in various ways according to varieties of meditation was banned by that foolish Hiranyakashipu because of his pride in his superior bodily strength and his ability to conquer others. So the Vidyadharas, they could appear and disappear. It's interesting. Now, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has killed him just as if the demon were an animal. Unto that supreme pastime form of Lord Narasimha, we eternally offer our respectful obeisances. The inhabitants of Nagaloka said, the most sinful Hiranyakashipu took away all the jewels on our hoods and all our beautiful wives. Now, since his chest has been pierced by your nails, you are the source of all pleasure to our wives. Thus we together offer our respectful obeisances unto you. Report. No one is peaceful if his wealth is taken away, his wealth and wife are forcibly taken away. All the inhabitants of Nagaloka, which is situated below the earthly planetary system, were in great anxiety because their wealth had been stolen and their wives kidnapped by Hiranyakashipu. So he was really, you know, plundering and pillaging, wasn't he? Now, Hiranyakashipu having been killed, their wealth and wives were returned and their wives felt satisfied. The inhabitants of various lokas or planets offered their respectful obeisances unto the Lord because they were relieved by the death of Hiranyakashipu. Disturbances similar to those created by Hiranyakashipu are now taking place all over the world because of demoniac governments. Prabhupada is just very strong, isn't he? He's just saying these governments are demons. We're allowed to print these books. We put them in the library and everything. It just astounds me, the potency of Prabhupada. Anyone else did that? No way. Oh, here's a lovely book. You know, we're telling how the governments of this world are demoniac. Would you like a set for your library? Yeah, sure. As stated in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the men of the governments of Kali Yuga will be no better than rogues and plunderers. Thus the populace will be harassed on one side by scarcity of food and on another by heavy taxation by the government, In other words, the people in most parts of the world in this age are harassed by the ruling principles of Hiranyakashipu. So whatever, what we are experiencing now on this planet is what Hiranyakashipu was doing throughout the whole universe. Very similar. You know, just like in, where is it? South African countries where, you know, one militant group, and they, every now and then, they go to a school and they just steal all the girls. You know, they'll just kidnap them all. You know, one time they took about 180 or something, and I think recently they went to a school and took about 70, you know. And things like that, you know. So you just imagine that. You just imagine the suffering of those parents, you know, their children. You just can't imagine that suffering. All their daughters just taken away, you know, just to become slaves. And these things are becoming more common. All the Manus offered their prayers as follows. As your order carriers, O Lord, we, the Manus and the law givers for human society, but because of the temporary supremacy of this great demon, Hiranyakashipu, our laws for maintaining Varnasram Dharma were destroyed. O Lord, now that you have killed this great demon, we are in our normal condition. Kindly order us, your eternal servants, what to do now. So Prabhupada discusses this a little bit in the purport, that Krishna refers to the Varnasram in the Bhagavad Gita. So the human society can live peacefully and make advancement in spiritual life. So two things. They can live peacefully in this world and make advancement in spiritual life. That's a Varnasram. So why would anyone be against that? And the Manus compiled the Manu Samhita from the Vedic knowledge. There's sometimes incarnations of the Lord and sometimes empowered living entities. Formerly, many years ago, Lord Krishna instructed the sun god. The Manus are generally sons of the sun god. Therefore, while speaking to Arjuna about the importance of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said this instruction was given to Vivishvan, the sun god, who in turn instructed to his son Manu. Manu gave the law known as Manu Samhita, which is full of directions based on Varna and Ashrama concerning how to live as a human being. These are very scientific ways of life, but under the rule of demons like Hiranyakashipu, human society breaks all these systems of law and order and gradually becomes lower and lower. Thus, there is no peace in the world. The conclusion is that if we want real peace and order in the human society, we must follow the principles laid down by the Manu Samhita, as confirmed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So following the Manu Samhita means following Varnasram. Bhaktivedanta Swami gave a whole, you know, very nice series of lectures. I've got them on Manu Samhita, yeah, and how they apply to ISKCON and things like that as well. So Prabhupada's. What we see here is that we were talking before how sometimes in ISKCON, you know, we had the zonal charis. Some things were just wrong, but they were wrong from the top. And what happens is that everyone underneath can no longer properly do what they would usually do. You're saying here that, so Hiranyakashipu from the top is doing the wrong thing, and that means you might think, oh, well, then so and so will still be. No, all the way down the chain, no one can do what they're probably supposed to do. Now, one of the things, just to give you an example, when they had the zonal acharya, therefore it's very important that the leaders do the right thing from the top. Because even you have qualified people under them, they actually can't function. When the Zonal Acharyas were there, what happened was that they become so powerful with so many disciples, so they were, you know, their disciples are grand disciples of Prabhupada, and who were gradually doing everything, because there were very few Prabhupada disciples around, so places like Australia. No? So if the Guru said something, and that was embraced with great enthusiasm by thousands and thousands of devotees in that zone, any devotee who said something different was immediately a rascal. And that didn't matter whether they were a Prabhupada disciple or anyone. They did not have a voice. They literally just had to accept what was being done. That guru overshadowed all of their godbrothers. Now it's nice, you know, the Prabhupada godbrothers, if another godbrother is there, you know, they're very much included, their opinion, you know, they want the disciples to hear them. That wasn't there. They would sit quietly. You know, the guru did everything, said everything. You know, they got the occasional opportunity to say things and do things, but it was very overshadowed. So even if they knew something was wrong, they had no ability to change anything or to even speak. So even in it, you know, but it's that thing when something goes wrong at the top in a very powerful way, even qualified people are there, they can't function to in their normal way. And so, you know, and that happens even in, you know, society. And of course, you know, there is, Christianity is having a whole lot of problem because, you know, some of the senior clergy, you know, now, you know, being thrown in jail for various different things that they got up to. But, you know, they were so powerful that even, you know, demoniac things are being done in the name of Christianity by the priests. But even you have good qualified priests, they couldn't override it, you know. So this is what we're seeing here. The Prajapatis offered their prayers as follows: O Supreme Lord, Lord of even Brahma and Shiva, we the Prajapatis were created by you to execute your orders, but we were forbidden by Hiranyakashipu to create any more good progeny. Now the demon is lying dead before us, his chest pierced by you. Let us therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto you, whose incarnation in this form of pure goodness is meant for the welfare of the entire universe. So we do hear often that, you know, the Lord appeared to save one devotee. But in saving that one devotee, he saved everyone in the universe. And such is the importance of one pure devotee in the universe. And so we're saying, you know, you have one pure devotee that by their humble, pure devotional service, they can restore order to the entire universe. And when the Lord acts for that one pure devotee, the whole universe is benefited. The inhabitants of Gandhava Loka prayed, Your Lordship, we ever engage in your service by dancing and singing in dramatic performances, but this Hiranyakashipu, by the influence of his bodily strength and valor, brought us under his subjugation. Now he has been brought to this low condition by your Lordship. What benefit can result from the activities of such an upstart as Hiranyakashipu? So Prabhupada mentions, by being a very obedient servant of the Supreme Lord, one becomes extremely powerful in bodily strength, influence, and effulgence, whereas the fate of demoniac upstarts is ultimately to fall down like Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu and persons like him may be very powerful for some time, but the obedient servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like the demigods, remain powerful always. They are victorious over the influence of Hiranyakashipu by the grace of the Supreme Lord. Here also we see the influence of the devotees of the Lord, what to speak of the pure devotees, that even though it sometimes appears that the obedient servants of the person of Godhead by the demigods remain powerful always. So it's only, you know, there's only the therefore Krishna says to Arjuna, you declare it, Arjuna, that my devotee never perishes. The inhabitants of the Charana planet said, O Lord, because you have destroyed the demon Hiranyakashipu, who is always like a snake in the hearts of the all honest men, we are now relieved and we eternally take shelter of your lotus feet, which award the conditioned soul liberation from material contamination. To spread the Krishna consciousness movement, Srila Prabhupada says, devotees have to face many dangers and impediments all over the world. But a faithful servant who preaches with great devotion to the Lord must know that Lord Nrisimhadeva is always his protector. The inhabitants of Yakshaloka prayed, O controller of the 24 elements, we are considered the best servants of your lordship because of rendering services pleasing to you. Yet we engage in as palanquin carriers by the order of Hiranyakashipu, the son of Diti. Our lord, in the form of Nrisimha, you know how this demon gave trouble to everyone, but now you have killed him and his body is mixing with the five material elements. So it describes here the inhabitants of the Yaksha planet as supposed to be the best of all servants, but Hiranyakashipu engaged them as palanquin carriers. The inhabitants of Kimpurusha Loka said, we are insignificant living entities and you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller. Therefore, how can we offer suitable prayers unto you? When this demon was condemned by devotees because they were disgusted with him, he was then killed by you. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport, quoting from Bhagavad Gita 7 and 8, the Lord appears in order to execute two kinds of activities, to kill the demons and protect the devotees. When the devotees are too disturbed by the demons, the Lord certainly appears in different incarnations to give the devotees protection. The devotees following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj should not be disturbed by the demoniac activities of the non-devotees. Rather, they should stick to their principles as sincere servants of the Lord and rest assured that the demoniac activities directed against them will not be able to stop their devotional service. So, we see that demoniac activities, sometimes demoniac activities come from external sources. Sometimes, like Indra, you know, Indra actually engaged in demoniac activities against the devotees. Prabhupada said he's not a demon, he's a devotee. But nonetheless, he engaged in demoniac activities against the Brajavasis, the most dear devotees. It's quite astonishing, you know, when you think of that. So, but it doesn't matter where it's coming from. Krishna will put an end to it. That's the point. And sometimes, you know, our own mind, you know, can, you know, be contaminated by bad habits from our demoniac past and give us trouble from within our own mind. And the Sringadeva will protect us from that as well. The inhabitants of Vaitalika Loka said, "Dear Lord, because of chanting your spotless glories in great assemblies and arenas of sacrifice, we were accustomed to great respect from everyone. This demon, however, usurped that position. Now, to our great fortune, you have killed this great demon exactly as one cures a chronic disease." So these inhabitants of Vaitalika Loka, so they chant the glories of the Lord in different assemblies and arenas of sacrifice. And that is a very good analogy that they're giving. That, you know, sometimes, you know, Chanika Pandit says to save the family, one may have to sacrifice a member. To save a village, one may have to sacrifice a family. You know, to save a country, one may have to sacrifice a village. And to save one's soul, one should be prepared to sacrifice everything. But it appears to be, it's a very, very difficult thing for people to do, especially in Kali Yuga, because of family attachments, to understand that principle. That sometimes, but when it's presented this way, that, you know, a member of a family may be nothing more than a disease which is killing the entire family and all, you know, like that. And when you present it like that, a disease, you know, when you go to a doctor and you say, "I have a disease," to save the body, what the doctor will do is he will kill so many living entities in your body to save, you know, the body, which is, you know, our one soul is conscious over that whole body. But so many living entities, there's so many other souls in the body, they have to be sacrificed, they have to be killed. And it's a similar principle. So when we see it like that, you know, they have different expressions. You know, one bad apple will spoil the whole bunch. You have a barrel of apples down the bottom there. You ever had that? You know, you buy a sack of potatoes, sack of spuds, and one of them's gone off. And if you leave it there for a couple of days, it just goes right through the whole, and they all, you know, ferment, and there's terrible smell. So you've got to get that one rotten one out, or a straw you buy a peck of straw. So it's like that with family, you know. You know, take a good look at your kids. I'm not looking at them. You see one that's, you know, a bit too sport. No, but they have to be, it has to be quite serious. And Harangi Kasapu was certainly a disease within the universe. But you know, it's a hard thing. You imagine having to make that choice, right? You have a bunch of kids and one turns out real bad. I had a system like that. We actually had to do that. Literally. Used to throw the bricks at my mother. I literally had to remove her out of the family. But
it,
what's that?
Social security. And then she was given social security. Yeah.
Oh, we tried to put her in jail. No, she was sane, but she was just demoniac. And it took many years for my mother to do that, because what had happened is that she'd come over and she used to do this thing, was whenever one of her children had a baby, you know, because my mother's got a soft spot for babies, so she'd send a picture of the baby my mother had, oh, come over, come and stay. And then she'd turn her life upside down for a couple of years and destroy her whole life to the point she just had to get her out. And she did that several times. And then, you know, after many, many years, you know, I explained to her, you just have to cut off, you know, and, which she did. But it's a very hard, even when someone turns you hot because it's, you know, it's your flesh and blood, they can't do it. And, you know, people still accuse Krishna because, you know, he incited Arjuna to fight the battle. They accused Krishna in India of inciting that violence. Even they read the whole Mahabharata and everything. They see everything Duryodhana, you know, it's all right. Duryodhana, you know, tried to kill these, you know, his friends with poison and so many things. And, oh, that's okay. But if Krishna kills it, oh, that's no, that's not good. Yeah, I mean, you know, we're not talking about an apple with a few blemishes. We're talking about a bad apple that's just rotten to the core. You know, it's not like we don't want to go getting rid of family members willy-nilly. Oh, that one didn't quite. This one didn't quite chant the 16 rounds today. And you 15 and a half out. There's the door. No Mangalai. Ramaswamy used to have a rule up in Sydney. He'd say, anyone who doesn't come for Mangalai, no, there's no breakfast. But he never implemented it. He didn't implement it, but it scared people, just the thought of it. It was enough to get them to Mangalai. But, you know, it's like Mother Yasoda, you can show the stick, but don't, you know, you don't use it. But when someone literally, that the entire family is racing headlong to their complete doom and destruction, then that person has to be cut off from. I'm not just talking about, oh, you know, I just can't stand the noise, or, you know.
No, I didn't mean that.
They want to watch that TV show while I'm watching this one. You know, no, they always want to hold the remote. Out!
I didn't mean like that. I meant that. Not in my case, but there are some cases where I've seen the Indian boy or Indian girl, they seriously want to be Krishna conscious, but the parents are very much opposed or against it.
Right.
So strongly, it's very difficult for them.
Yeah, so that's, and that Prabhupada mentions that in his previous purport, that he says the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his transcendental form of Narahari Nrisingadev is always ready to kill the demons who always create disturbances in the minds of honest devotees. As soon as you become devotee, anyone with any demoniac nature is going to cause you some trouble. You know, that's just the way of this world. They're always doing it, and they always will. And that's their very nature. The Kanara said, so we got two more to go. The Kanara said, O Supreme Controller, we are ever existing servants of your Lordship. But instead of rendering service to you, we were engaged by this demon in his service, constantly and without remuneration. This sinful man has now been killed by you. Therefore, O Lord Nrisingha, our Master, we offer our respectful obeisances unto you. Please continue to be our patron. And the associates of Lord Vishnu in Vaikuntha offered this prayer. O Lord, our supreme giver of shelter, today we have seen your wonderful form as Lord Nrisingadev, meant for the good fortune of all the world. O Lord, we can understand that Hiranyakashipu was the same Jaya who engaged in your service but was cursed by Brahmanas and who thus received the body of a demon. We understand that his having now been killed is your special mercy upon him. Report. Hiranyakashipu's coming to this earth and acting as the Lord's enemy was prearranged. Jaya and Vijaya were cursed by the Brahmanas, Sanat Kumaras, Sanandana and Sanatan, because Jaya and Vijaya checked these four Kumaras. The Lord accepted this cursing of his servants and agreed that they would have to go to the material world and would then return to Vaikuntha after serving the term of the curse. Jaya and Vijaya were very much perturbed, but the Lord advised them to act as enemies, for then they would return after three births, otherwise, ordinarily, they would have to take seven births. With this authority, Jaya and Vijaya acted as the Lord's enemies, and now these two were dead. All the Vishnudutas understood that the Lord's killing of Hiranyakashipu was special mercy bestowed upon them. There we go. So that finishes that chapter. So we have two chapters which we're going to go. So in the next chapter, of course, we will hear how Prahlad pacifies the Lord Narsingadeva with prayers. I might just finish by reading the introduction to that, and then we'll just leave it there. As related in this chapter, Prahlad Maharaj, following the order of Lord Brahma, pacified the Lord when the Lord was extremely angry after having killed Hiranyakashipu. After Hiranyakashipu was killed, the Lord continued to be very angry, and the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, could not pacify him. Even Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, the constant companion of Narayan, could not dare to come before Lord Narasimhadev. Then Lord Brahma asked Prahlad Maharaj to go forward and pacify the Lord's anger. Prahlad Maharaj, being confident of the affection of his master, Lord Narasimhadev, was not afraid at all. He very gravely appeared before the Lord's lotus feet and offered him respectful obeisances. Lord Narasimhadev, being very much affectionate toward Prahlad Maharaj, put his hand on Prahlad's head, and because of being personally touched by the Lord, Prahlad Maharaj immediately achieved Brahmajnana, spiritual knowledge. Thus he offered his prayers to the Lord in full spiritual knowledge and full devotional ecstasy. The instructions given by Prahlad Maharaj in the form of his prayers are as follows. Prahlad said, "I am not proud of being able to offer prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I simply take shelter of the mercy of the Lord, for without devotion one cannot appease him. One cannot please the Supreme Personality of Godhead simply by dint of high parentage or great opulence, learning, austerity, penance or mystic power. Indeed, these are never pleasing to the Supreme Lord, for nothing can please him but pure devotional service." And of course, he's mentioning here some of the opulences of all the various persons who have just previously offered prayers, different grades of devotees, but not necessarily pure devotees. Even if a devotee is a brahmana qualified with the 12 brahminical symptoms, he cannot be very dear to the Lord. Whereas if a person born in a family of dog eaters is a devotee, the Lord can accept his prayers. The Lord does not need anyone's prayers, but if a devotee offers his prayers to the Lord, the devotee benefits greatly. Ignorant persons born in low families, therefore, can sincerely offer heartfelt prayers to the Lord, and the Lord will accept them. As soon as one offers his prayer to the Lord, he is immediately situated on the Brahman platform. Lord Narasimhadev appeared for the benefit of all human society, not only for Prahlad's personal benefit. The fierce form of Lord Narasimhadev may appear most awful to a non-devotee, but to the devotee, the Lord is always affectionate as he is in other forms. Conditioned life in the material world is actually extremely fearful. Indeed, a devotee is not afraid of anything else. Fear of material existence is due to false ego. Therefore, the ultimate goal of life for every living entity is to attain to the position of being servant of the servant of the Lord. The miserable condition of the living entities in the material world can be remedied only by the mercy of the Lord. Although there are so-called material protectors like Brahma and other demigods, or even one's own father, they are unable to do anything if one is neglected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, one who has fully taken shelter of the Lord's lotus feet can be saved from the onslaught of material nature. Therefore, every living entity should be unattracted by material so-called happiness and should take shelter of the Lord by all means. That is the mission of human life. To be attracted by sense gratification is simply foolish. Whether one is a devotee of the Lord or is a non-devotee does not depend upon one's birth in a high or low family. Even Lord Brahma and the goddess of fortune cannot achieve the full favour of the Lord, whereas a devotee can easily attain such devotional service. The Lord's mercy is bestowed equally upon everyone, regardless of whether one is high or low. Because Prahlad Maharaj was blessed by Narada Muni, Prahlad became a great devotee. The Lord always saves the devotee from impersonalists and voidists. Hare Krishna? Yes, can you call me back in 5 minutes?
Sure.
Thank you. But because Prahlad Maharaj was blessed by Narada Muni, Prahlad became a great devotee. The Lord always saves the devotee from impersonalists and voidists. The Lord is present in everyone's heart as the super soul to give the living being protection and all benefits. Thus the Lord acts sometimes as the killer and sometimes as the protector. One should not accuse the Lord for any discrepancies. It is his plan that we see varieties of life within this material world. All of them are ultimately his mercy. Although the entire cosmic manifestation is non-different, the material world is nonetheless different from the spiritual world. Only by the mercy of the Supreme Lord can one understand how the wonderful material nature acts. For example, although Lord Brahma appeared from the lotus seat that had grown from the abdomen of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, he could not understand what to do after his appearance. He was attacked by two demons. Every time we mention demons, one of those planes flies by. It's probably Madhu and Kaitava. Two demons, Madhu and Kaitava, who took away Vedic knowledge. But the Lord killed them and entrusted to Lord Brahma the Vedic knowledge. Thus the Lord appears in every millennium in the societies of demigods, human beings, animals, saints and aquatics. All such incarnations are meant to protect the devotees and kill the demons, but this killing and protecting does not reflect any sense of partiality on the part of the Supreme Lord. The conditioned soul is always attracted by the external energy. Therefore, he is subject to lust and greed, and he suffers under the conditions of material nature.
What's the connection between saying that that's a difference between spiritual world and material world and saying that? I didn't understand the connection of that statement with what followed.
Yeah.
That the spiritual world is different from the material world. And then saying that how is that like?
Well, yeah, because in the here we're hearing that it says four examples. So we're talking about how the material world acts. For example, Lord Brahma is born But as soon as, and he couldn't understand what to do.
So how do you understand in the spiritual world? In the spiritual world, everybody's in full knowledge, that's what you're trying to contrast.
Well, what happened was he was attacked by two demons who took away the Vedic knowledge, and then the Lord killed them and gave Brahma that Vedic knowledge. And says, well, in the material world, the Lord has to keep killing these demoniac persons who are always obstructing the Lord's will.
So in the spiritual world, everything is...
In the spiritual world, the Lord's will is not obstructed by demons. But in the material world, it is. So although, you know, they're both part of the Lord's creation, we can say, oh, this, because people do say that this material world is part of the Lord's creation, so therefore they feel that why not stay here and enjoy it and manage it on behalf of the Lord, as if that's, but the Lord doesn't want them to do that. He wants them to actually just get out and get everyone out with them. Don't stay here. That. So it is always obstructed by demons, and that's the nature of this world, and so we're trying to understand that because the Lord's always rectifying that demoniac principle of obstructing the Lord's will, therefore he's always acting for the benefit of the living entities. The conditioned soul, and here we see also, the conditioned soul is always subject to lust and greed, and they're attracted by the external energy. So this is where the demoniac principles come, so he has to rectify that. The Lord's cause of his mercy towards his devotee is the only means by which to get out of the material existence. So it destroys our demoniac tendency, and it destroys demons. Anyone engaged in glorifying the Lord's activities is always unafraid of this material world. Whereas one who cannot glorify the Lord in that way is subject to all lamentation. Those interested in silently worshipping the Lord in solitary places may be eligible for liberation themselves, but a pure devotee is always aggrieved to see others suffering. Therefore, not caring for his own liberation, he always engages in preaching by glorifying the Lord. So this glorification is principal because that's how we rise above our attraction to the material energy and destroy the lust and the greed, etc. We can do that silently for ourselves, appreciate the Lord, or we can do that on behalf and engage everyone else in it. Prahlad Maharaj therefore had tried to deliver his class friends by preaching and never remained silent. Although being silent, observing austerities and penances, learning the Vedic knowledge, literature, undergoing ritualistic ceremonies, living in a solitary place, and performing japa and transcendental meditation are approved means of liberation. They are meant for non-devotees or for cheaters who want to live at the expense of others. A pure devotee, however, being freed from all such deceptive activities, is able to see the Lord face to face. So the very strong words against even all the pious activities mentioned in the Vedas. Strong words, and how dare you look after yourself and just watch everyone go to hell? The atomic theory of, imagine doing that to your family, you know. It's a good thing to save your life. There's a fire. Oh yes, I'll protect myself. You know, head out. And you get outside. Where's the rest of your family? Oh, they're still in the house. You're not going to get praised. The Lord is the cause of everything, and therefore he is the cause of this creation. One should therefore always engage in devotional service by offering respectful obeisances to the Lord, offering prayers, working for the Lord, worshipping the Lord in the temple, always remembering the Lord, and always hearing about his transcendental activities. With these six kinds of activities, one cannot attain... without these six kinds of activities, one cannot attain to devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj thus offered his prayers to the Supreme Lord, begging his mercy at every step. Lord Narasimhadev was pacified by Prahlad Maharaj's prayers and wanted to give him benedictions by which Prahlad could procure all kinds of material facilities. Prahlad Maharaj, however, was not misled by material facilities. Rather, he wanted to remain always a servant of the Lord. So as you can see, that's a very, very substantial chapter to get through. So P.D. Lakshman is going overseas, and Naveen is also going overseas. So you'll be back in 5 weeks, Naveen will be back in 4 weeks. We won't be having an exam, you know, looking at the content, before you get back anyway. Looking at the content of this chapter, very, very substantial. There's, at least if you can hear it online, that would be good. There's 55 verses in there, but very solid philosophy. And then chapter 10, we'll hear about the best among, Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees. That chapter there is probably goes through a lot quicker, but so over the next 4 or 5 weeks we'll be literally just finishing that, those chapters off, and a week off here and there, and then we'll look at the exam and essays and all that when everyone's back.
Do we have class next Saturday?
No. So next Saturday, no class. All right.
Following Saturday.
Yes. So after that, we'll for the month after that, till a couple of devotees get back from India, then we'll just finish off this chapter. These two chapters. Yeah. All right then. Thank you. Hare Krishna. So study that next chapter. Because there is very substantial philosophy, very important philosophy there. Some of the pillars of our understanding and preaching. So you've done that.
Yeah, recorded it. Awesome.
Oh, I don't know. It's very difficult to say. Okay. Do you see? You just keep on up there. You need one down there. Did you just go to book distribution? Was that the crowd numbers about the same?
A bit less.
It didn't seem to be as noisy.
I can fix it.